Hello, welcome to the Transmedia Podcast. I am Natalie Rios and you can find me online as at Nati Goiko. As some of you might know, we recently hosted Conductor Conference 2015, which main focus was connected learning and transmedia for change. And now we want to share with you the great talks that we had in case you missed it or you want to hear them again. So we're going to start today with Jurjen Borgvangsbakk's talk, which is about the use of serious games and applied games to change people's behavior. Jurjen is Games for Health Europe chairman, and he is an applied game architect, so he's an expert on the subject. We hope you enjoy it.
Okay. Thank you, Robert, for the invitation. I don't know if the... Are you going to turn off the light or... Really? Okay. Robert asked me to tell you more about the work we do. It's about applied games or serious games, as some people call it as well. And we use applied games to change people's behavior. It's not only about... people's behavior, but behaviors of organizations and systems. So I will take you through the work we are doing and the vision we have towards this area, this topic. Robert will speak on our conference, which we will organize on the 2nd and 3rd of November in the Netherlands. And he was the highest rated speaker last year, so it was a very refreshing talk. Behind me you see an algorithm. This is a project, an experiment we do from the idea that if a pilot learns how to fly in a simulator, how nice would it be that a surgeon would learn how to operate with a simulator as well. And the nice thing I think of this image is that it's built up from scratch. So there is not a human being standing model for it. The problem with this image right now is that it's too big. It's 10.2 terabit. So you can't carry it to a hospital right now. So we're working on that. I will talk about change and how we design people's behavior. If you want to connect with me, please find me on social media. My name is Jurjen van Rijswijk. Most of the time, I only make posts about applied games, serious games, whatever. In 2010, we raised a foundation called Games for Health Europe Foundation. The work we're doing, we're working on 20 years now in the field of applied games, together with my wife Sandra, who's in the back as well. In 2010, we raised this foundation from the idea that we want to improve healthcare, make it more affordable and more fun with games. And nowadays, we have the largest community in the world, 20,000 professionals. Who want to play all day with us and do research project with us, etc., etc. So if you want to join this ecosystem, feel free to do. And if you want to know more about our work and the work of many people, on the 2nd and 3rd of November, we have a huge conference in the Netherlands where Robert Pretten also will be the closing keynote. So I will do the opening here, and you close at our conference, Robert. Is that okay? I'm an agricultural engineer, so I learned how to model complex systems. And everybody says, how did you end up in the world of gaming? Well, that's not so difficult. For me, a model, if you put a visual layer on top of a model and you add assignments to it and all kinds of rewards, you basically have all ingredients for a game. So I did this for water, I did it for climate models, I did it for all kinds of agricultural models from the beginning. Later I did other complex models, other complex modeling, for example, the Weaver stepper of ASML, which is a machine, very complex, which produces chips, but also an optimization program for the MRE scan in Philips. All complex systems you can't play with in real. But if you model them, you can change them digitally and see where to find improvements. And for us, we see complex systems, or we see systems as a game that is a bad design. For example, this is a waiting room in a hospital. And for us, in a hospital, we approach a hospital as a game that's bad designed. The fact that there is a waiting room tells me something about your process. It's suboptimal, because if everything went according to a patient-centered design, there wouldn't have been a waiting room. So that's our approach, and we do that for everything. There is even a story about the waiting room, Robert. Did you know? You know this. You know it?
No.
Oh, you should look this up. This is really a great movie. This is Transmedia storytelling as I see it around the subject waiting room. So very interesting. Look it up. And for us, everything we approach as a bad design game. So for us, life is a bad designed game, and not because we think it's bad, but if we approach it like a game, we are always constantly looking for improvement. So it's just like a positive approach. And for us, applied games are forms of transport on the digital highway to learn people something from a distance together with technology. And I will explain that later, how we do that. I'll focus on healthcare, because healthcare or health is one of our main topics. And what we see is quite some companies talk about, we're going to Uberize healthcare. We're going to destroy healthcare. This is what I call creative destruction. What we prefer is the knowledge and experience of people working in healthcare to empower them with technology. So that's for why we say we're using creative construction. Because in our opinion, a cab driver doesn't have anything with Uber. It will destroy his business. Why not empower a cab driver with technology? Because in the end, and especially in healthcare, we know that we need to do more with less resources in the future. So we definitely will need those people with all the knowledge and skills. Another thing we see is that definitely it is a change of era, another era of change. But the dinosaur didn't see it coming, the meteorite that hit the world. I think healthcare is. So we approach healthcare not as a system in crisis, but a system that needs migration. And that's what we call transformation. And we need healthcare professionals, because we believe that healthcare professionals are the change agents. And we constantly blend digital technology with physical activities. So yesterday evening I was talking with Robert, and I think definitely that transmedia storytelling could very well contribute in the field where we are active to change systems and to change people's behavior, even in hospitals. And I challenged Robert to have a talk about that during our conference. There's something going on with exponential growth and technology. If you want to do less, or if you want to do more and better things with less resources, you need to invest in technology. The problem is that there's always a valley of disappointment in the beginning. If you want to keep on doing the things you did always like before, it's a process that can't that won't survive, because especially in Europe, a lot of people get older, there's a diminishing workforce, so we need the technology to empower that workforce to provide better healthcare for more people. The funny thing is, yes, with technology, it's you have the potential to liberate resources, but you need quite some time up front before you reach this tipping point of growth. Also, the funny thing is that in the beginning it feels gradual, but then it's there suddenly. So that's a feeling around exponential technology. And we see a shift towards many things, like healthcare is shifting towards health. It's also shifting from the subsidized patients toward the insured customer. More and more people are willing to pay a part of their income for health instead of for healthcare. And it's shifting from needs to desires. And what we every day encounter is that in healthcare people see technology as a threat instead of a liberation. While we say technology is a resource liberating mechanism, and especially games. I don't know if you have read this book, Abundance, from Peter Diamandis. I would really advise you to read this because he has a very clear vision on how technology is able to liberate resources. And he uses a very nice metaphor for that, an apple tree. If you plant an apple tree, it grows and it gives you the apples you can take. But when the tree grows bigger, you can't reach for every resources left. And then you can use technology, in this case a ladder, to reach to the other apples. And this is how we approach technology to liberate resources. And it's also man versus machine. The fact that we say that we're behind the computer but in front of the television tells me how we approach that computer. We're not in control. We're behind the device. The funny thing, although, is that we're on our phone. So we're definitely in control of this device. And that's where I think games come in. Like Uber does, it automizes suboptimal systems. But we also need the aid of humans. But you can't automize a human. You can informize them. You can't give data to them, and you can ask data back. But that requires an interface that people like, and we experience that games are very good interfaces between someone's head and technology, because people like to play. They see games as an interface as not a threat, but something that it's nice to do, and people are intrinsically motivated to play. Quite some people I saw here start without Robert asking to take a look at what's on the table. You're already investigating what's there. You're curious what there is on the table. We're intrinsically motivated to see what's going on. And basically everything everything we do is about learning. Who in this room learned how to cycle by reading a book? How did we learn to cycle? You just stepped on a bike and drove away, or no, falling down. So you made mistakes. So you learned it by doing and making mistakes. So that's funny. If we talk about we should learn more, and in healthcare it's a lot about changing people's behavior, lifestyle interventions we call them. It's about learning, do something different. But if we are talking about these things, we focus on learning instead of doing. So I believe that if we want to learn people more, we should let them do. And that's where game comes in. Game creates a very friendly environment, a safe environment where people, by making mistakes, learn. So I would urge you not to talk about e-learning and e-health anymore. Let's talk about e-doing. Because by doing things, making mistakes, we learn. And of course, there was always the question, do games work? I hate the question. I get that millions of times, do games work? Can you imagine? If I ask back, do books work? There's no scientific proof that reading a book works. So I advise you, if you are in a creative process, ask a space lawyer to join. That's what we did as well. Because space lawyers think of situations of two satellites colliding, and is the one that came from the right or the one that came from the left, and what's right and left in space, to be sued. So they have a very fresh vision on legislation, and for us, we use that towards healthcare. If a doctor asks, does it work? Well, we let the space lawyer do the talking, because it's something new. We're pioneers, so there's no legislation possible. Funny thing, although, is that two games already have been classified as a medicine. And can you imagine the first step you should take in that testing is animal testing. So can you imagine an iPad with a cat and see if he dies by using the medicine? It's very funny. The FDA is very helping in this. So does reading a book works? There's no scientific proof that reading a book works, but we all do it. So, and books are here only for 500 years. But since we walk right up, we do two things, telling stories and playing games. So we do that for 6 million years. And we still ask ourselves the questions, do games work? I know I probably won't get this question here. It's a question where we are confronted with often. There's a very nice book written by Stephen Johnson, Everything Bad is Good for You. Of course, it's about games. And he came up with a really nice metaphor. Imagine that in the 1500s, online games were invented. And in 1919, books were invented, so only 30 years back. How would journalists, teachers, and parents would talk and write about children reading all those books? And a friend of mine who made a documentary of this book with interviews of this author published this it was broadcasted on TV, and I share a brief part of that. So how do we learn? I told you we are somehow programmed and intrinsically motivated to learn. We learn by recognizing patterns. We are creatures that constantly are on the outlook for patterns. And if we see a pattern, endorphin is released in our brain, and we feel happy. And that's the reward mechanism for our body to search for the next pattern. So can you tell me what's written here? West? Can we see it west? Maybe you should look there. You should. No, it's west.
Oh, west.
Do we all? Who doesn't see this word west? Everybody. You can't see it. You see it over there, perhaps. The W. It's a little bit darker. It's here. The W, in white. The E. Yeah. That's the endorphin release in your brain. Oh yes, yeah. That's the endorphin. You're feeling happy. Well, of course, there's no West written here. This is a black sheet with white blocks, and you are able to see the word West because your pattern recognizes. And I influence you for the rest of your life. Sorry. You can't take a look at this pattern without seeing the word West forever. So, and this is where games come in. Games are pattern generators. They challenge you. You see the pattern. You get the endorphin, and you search for the next pattern. And games are extremely good in providing you with tiny blocks of patterns, which we call learning, of course. And talking about, am I able to make games to learn? Yes. If I can make a game for a cat to learn how to catch fishes and mice, I'm sure I'm able to create a game for people. And this is how we change systems. We change education, we change healthcare, and we change or we improve corporates. Even if it was only for this reason, this is a British psychiatrist who studied the brain activity of youngsters during a week, and he found out that if they're at school, they're nearly brain dead. A complete flatliner. You know why? Because they're focusing on learning instead of doing. And we know that if you learn how to, if you read something about cycling, you aren't able really to cycle in the end. So my kids, I need to force them often to school. And this is also our ambition to change, to do something about the educational system, only if it was for this reason. And the design of the behavior, we do it, we use for that model, I love this model of B.G. Fox, very simple. What B.G. Fox says, if you want to change people's behavior, you need to put triggers in the path of motivated people. So people need motivation to change their behavior, and you can trigger them if they're motivated. And it's not always difficult. This great example in London, where window washers got dressed in Spider-Man clothing, made the kids happy in that hospital, and with that they recovered faster. So it's a very good example of triggers for someone, and this won't change people's behavior forever. This will change the behavior of the kids for a short period of time. Maybe you know this. Maybe you know this movie. Who doesn't know this movie? Okay, okay. This is a design assignment for us. This is in Odenplan in Stockholm. And the question was, this is a subway exit, or as you call it, how do you call it? A tube? Underground. This is an underground exit. And the question is, can you, in this situation, make people use the stairs instead of the escalator? Well, then for us, the model of B.G. Fogg comes in. What's the ability of these people? They need to be able to walk. The motivation of these people is they want to go out. And the trigger to take the escalator or the stairs instead of the escalator, oh, there is no trigger here. Let's design that. So as you can see, you will change people's behavior for a short period of time, a couple of times probably, but not for everybody. And that's a learning I think we should all know, is that if you design something for people, it's almost every time for a certain demography. Maybe you've heard of the game Eki for MSN 10 years back, where guys and girls could raise a kid in 18 days digitally. And what happened was it was a huge design mistake. The girls start pampering the kid, giving it food, nice clothing, etc., etc. And the guys looked how long the kid would live without food. So that wasn't a real good combination, the two of them together. So that's always something you should be aware of. You should probably design an ecosystem of behavioral change instead of one thing that works for everybody. Probably if I would ask you to pay me £34 and then you would clean the streets the next hour of rubbish, you won't probably say that's a good idea. Or you will probably say that's not a good idea. Well, in fact, in the Netherlands, there is a theme park where kids throw in rubbish, cleaning the park, with this guy. He's called Hollebolle Gijs. He sucks the rubbish in, and then he says, thank you, in a very funny way. And the kids love it. So if I see this, I see behavioral change to the max. Let people pay and play and solve your problems. That's basically the story of our lives. So we think of constantly, how can we change people's behavior for the better? And if it's possible to do it positively and commercially valid around the subject of waste, I think we can change people's behavior no matter what. And you can, with technology, you can liberate resources of people picking up garbage in the parks by making an endless pit using that technology. So it's possible to change people's behavior by letting them play. And this is endless scalable. We did a project with Skype 3 years back. And we designed some things. One was the idea of Skype was, is it possible to make buildings happy? And I thought only the title of that program is fantastic. Skype thinking of how can we make buildings happy? From the idea that if a building is happy, the people who will work and live in it will be happy as well. So one of the designs is a high five lane. You can do this in the afternoon or tomorrow. Just create a hallway and put two papers on the beginning and the end, and this is the high five lane. And the rule is everyone you meet, you give them a high five. We all know that it's important to drink water during the day, but we also know that we're not actually doing it. So we start playing with water coolers, and we gave water coolers a feeling with sound and with lights. So if the water cooler wasn't used, it became sober and dark with lights and sounds. And people were, oh, the water cooler is not happy. I'm no one to make him happy. And then the people start tapping water to make him happy. And then with lights and the sounds, it became happy. And that was for us a discovery that we always thought that motivation and goals and targets should be connected. But this, with this, we found out that it could be not connected. It's not necessary to connect motivation with the goal you want to reach, you want to achieve. Because the motivation of the people was make the water cooler happy. The result was that they were drinking enough water. Robert, we started a little bit later, so I would ask you, I started at 9:30. You're in charge. 5 minutes? Okay. So I'll finish up in 5 minutes. In all the things we design, if it's for an airline or if it's for a hospital or a shopping mall, we know that loyalty is the basis and essence of the work we're doing. The funny thing is, if you let people spend time on something, it becomes valuable. So if you want to achieve something with people in a commercial setting, if you want to have a higher turnover, and you let people spend time on something, it becomes automatically valuable. The funny thing is that if then, at that time, if they spend time, they're able to exchange time for money, they're almost automatically willing to do so. And then a second psychological effect happens, that it becomes even more valuable because only an idiot would spend time on something and money which isn't valuable. So, and then you have them forever. And in a healthcare setting, we say you can exchange it for health profit. So it's a very nice psychological effect. And we learned a lot from the work from Joseph Pine and Gilmer from the experience economy. And what we see, a lot of services, goods, and products to nowadays are in a commoditization process. They become less valuable. For example, flying. So what we say, if you want to be in the rat race of commoditization, help yourself. That's not our cup of tea. What we would like to do is, if you have an experience, if you want to create an experience for your customers, and you're able to create time by giving them this, on this YX, there's the perceived value. This is the real value. So in a commercial setting, if you want to charge the premium towards your customers, but you have the notice that everything you do is in a turning into a commodity, it might be an idea to focus on the experience for your customers. If you are able to increase the perceived value of the things you're doing, you're not going to compete on price, but you're going to compete on the things you're doing. And once people spend time on the things you create for them, it's almost automatically will convert into the premium you can charge. And I think that's a lesson we've learned the last 20 years, that what we are able to do is create experiences for people in a commercial setting for a brand, but in a healthcare setting for a therapy. Knowing that if healthcare is focused on making things as effective as possible, people spend less time on things. And that's stupid, because we know that if people spend less time on it, that it becomes less valuable. So therefore we say, let's use technology to slow down the process of spending time. So with technology, we can let people spend more time on the things we think needs to become valuable for them to change their behavior. For example, to become loyal to your therapy. And I will share an interview we did with Pine on the new model. He extended this model because he already saw, this model is 20 years old, and he saw the rise of digital technology coming in. And I would like to share the multiverse model with you. And it's basically a design guide, I think also for the work you are doing, which is a very good reference to keep always in mind, because we are most of the time focusing on the real, or we're focusing on the virtual. And of course, transmedia storytelling is about blending technologies. And I think if you believe in this model, which we saw working, so for us it's evidence-based, and you combine it with the new model he designed, which is called the multiverse, I think we might having a very powerful instrument towards also healthcare. And that's where I challenged Robert last night. I think we should create a project and find something in the sphere of healthcare. And I will share this video with you, and then I'll let the program continue. Thank you very much.